Welcome to the FIFO Show. This is the podcast for all things fly in, fly out. My name's Brett, and together with my partner Sheena, we are the producers and hosts of this show. Join us as we talk to those people living and working in the FIFO industry to share with you their stories and to discuss the good, the bad, and the ugly side of this unorthodox lifestyle. But before we get into that, if you're easily offended or you have the little ones nearby, this may not be the podcast for you. Righto, now that we're all on the same page, let's get into the good stuff. For today's episode, we're doing things a little bit differently, as this is the first episode where we've had two guests on at the same time. I sit down with a couple of our good mates, Laith and Pedro, who have both been in the industry for quite a few years now. We discuss everything from shared custody whilst working FIFO, to some of the friendly banter you'll find in the workplace, to what the pub life is like in Kalgoorlie, and some of the reasons why we choose to work in the FIFO industry. So, buckle up and let's get into it. Got a copy, Sheeny? Got a copy, Sheeny? Got a copy, Laith?
Copy, Bretto.
And you got a copy there, Pedro.
Copy, Bretto, I'm here.
Has anyone seen Sheen?
Mate, I think I've seen her in the crib room.
Of course. In the crib room, as always.
Stealing all the pies.
Nah, Sheeny's not here for this episode. I've actually got a couple of my good mates, Laith and Pedro, and it's the boys taking over. So how you going, fellas?
Bloody good, mate. Bloody good. Yeah. Out a round of golf. Finally caught up after quite some time.
Yeah, it's been a while.
No, it's been a while, Brett. I haven't seen you for a while, mate, but it's good to get the boys together and have a chat and see what comes out.
We're only saying before, because these boys obviously come over to record this episode, but the last time Pete was actually here was like 2 years ago when we first moved in. So
yeah, I remember that. I can't forget that. It was an Eminem concert that night, and Brett and Sheens were having a few drinks around here, and they invited me around, and I was on Gumtree and Facebook Messenger trying to find tickets last minute, and I wasn't successful, so
no, but
I missed out.
Wasn't through a lack of trying, was it?
Mate,
you were spewing. We're sitting out the back just like pumping the Eminem tunes, just like getting all hyped up, and Pete was devastated.
I
was
surely phone, would have mate. Been arse like that, eh? For sure. Eminem arse like that.
Oh, man. I don't know what you're talking about, mate. Must be a Boilermaker thing, eh?
Oh, mate, you leave us boilies alone, eh? Bloody Sparky's always ripping the shit out of the boilies.
But yeah, no, I just missed out on that one, unfortunately. But I think there was another concert coming up. I think it was Ed Sheeran. And I think I was looking for tickets for that. And the same deal, couldn't get
it. Of course you were looking for tickets for Ed Sheeran, mate.
That's what I say, mate. I'm a romantic. I like those songs.
Oh, turn it up, Castro. Jesus Christ. Mate.
But speaking of catching up, it has been a while, and we've actually been trying to line this up for a while.
Too long, mate, too long.
It's something I'm sure a lot of our listeners can relate to, in how much of a pain in the ass it can be to line up, you know, I guess line up the breaks with your mates. Everyone's got their own life, everyone lives somewhere different. Like, as an example, Laith lives what, how far away are you?
Oh, about 45-50 minutes from the city, down towards Mandurah on the coast.
Yeah,
which is good. I like it that way. It's good. Come up to the city sometimes and then cruise back out to the country when I want to.
Just come up when you need to and
that's it, mate.
Come disappear.
Come up and annoy you boys.
But,
yeah, no, it is tricky, isn't it? Like, me and Pete, sort of lucky that Pete sort of organised his swing, like both doing 8 and 6 around me so we can catch up. And even then, doing 8 and 6 on the same swing, same days flying in and out, we still struggle to catch up sometimes. Pete's, you know, semi-married now, which might have something to do with it. But just thought I'd throw that one in there. But it is, isn't it, Brett? It's like, been a while since we've been trying to catch up as well. So.
Yeah, and I know for a long time, Latham, you were 2 and 1, working 2 weeks on, 1 week off. So obviously, like,
with me and Pedro, you'd only line up every like 6 weeks or something.
Yeah.
But even now you've come onto our swing of week on, week off.
Yeah.
You know, I guess we all realise it's still pretty hard having our own lives. You live, definitely, you know, distance away. Pete's in a pretty solid relationship now, yeah, obviously.
things have changed, mate.
Then you throw kids in there with me with my little boy, and then Pete with his two boys, right, as well.
And yeah, that's one thing I'll admit I forget a lot of the time is, like, you boys do have kids.
Yeah, bro.
Being a kid.
We know you got two cats, bro, but God, that's a counter.
Not the same.
Yeah, I'm happy to just leave the cats at home.
Oh, I could say something there, but I'm not. I'm going to just watch my tongue off it, I think.
Yeah.
But I guess from your point of view, like, give us a bit of a rundown on when you are at work and you want to plan something for your days off. How do you plan it around, you know, your kids and around your partner now, Pete, and then, like...
Yeah, I suppose, like, in my situation, it's probably different to Latho's, but... For me, like, I have a shared care arrangement, so, like, I sort of line up. So I get a weekend off every second break, so at least I get to spend time with my partner and go out and have dinner and go out and see, like, events and stuff like that. And then the opposite break, obviously, I'll have the kids that weekend, so I'll sort of spend time with them. So it sort of works out well. I can balance that out between my relationship and with my partner and the kids.
Yeah.
So it sort of keeps everyone happy.
Yeah,
I guess in a way, so I spread the love, sort
yeah, for
of,
sure.
Without losing my social life and all the things I want to do. So
yeah,
that sort of works for me.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners or FIFO workers in general can probably relate to that as well, because
It's very common in our industry for, I think, the FIFO thing as well. Like it's like a lot of people I've spoken to, they're in the same boat. A lot of blokes, obviously, mornings male dominated. You know, it's heading towards being more sort of woman involved as well. But like mine and Pete's situation with the kids and doing FIFO and the co-parenting and that sort of thing, it seems to be a very sort of common denominator within the FIFO industry because, you know, we're away and that sort of thing. So
yeah, I think the whole being away part is the part that makes it difficult. I think a lot of people that still live and work in town don't understand how difficult co-parenting can be for a FIFO worker, because you think about the normal couple that work the 9-to-5 in the city or whatever, if they've split up and they're co-parenting, they could go 50-50 straight up and it wouldn't be an issue because they're always at home.
Yeah.
Where, like, with the FIFO workers, you're away for half the time, you know, sometimes longer if you're on a different roster. You might be away for 2 or 3 weeks at a time.
Especially when you've got, like, you know, Pete FIFO, I'm FIFO. But then, like, for example, I co-parent with my boy's mum and she's recently stopped working from home and she's gone to work out in the, like, a normal job, not from home.
Out in an office or whatever.
Out in the workplace as such rather than from home. So that's been a bit of a challenge for me too. And then my boy going to school, I've gone from having him, I used to come home and I'd pretty much pick him up and then I'd have him for like pretty much the whole week. I'd sometimes get a weekend off here and there. And I'm adjusting at the moment to him going to kindy, his first year of kindy. So now I have him on the weekends only. And generally, like, the weekends is adult playtime too.
Yeah.
Especially when you're a single bloke like myself.
Yeah.
And...
very eligible single bloke.
Very good looking.
Lug Latho.
Yeah. Got a very big head too. It is, man. It's quite, like, I'm adjusting at the moment. But in saying that, it's been good too because it's having my boy the whole time. And Pete could vouch for this too because me and Pete obviously know each other very well. We know each other's stories very well. We're very close mates. So whatever I say here, he sort of already knows that. But, like, it's good catching up with you boys today because normally I wouldn't get to do this because I'd have Rylan and I can't take him on the golf course.
Yeah.
You know, like, you get to do – so, like, it's good for my mental health too now that things are changing because now I can have a bit of time to myself to adjust. And we were talking about this today, Brett and Pete, about how I think a lot of people don't understand when you go to FIFO, it's kind of like a separate life. You're like going from one life to another life. You're obviously, it's still in the same life, but it's completely different environments.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I explain it as when I'm at home, I have my home life, my home routine.
Yeah.
And then when I fly to work, I have my work life, my work routine, and I slip straight into that work routine.
Mm.
So it's like...
I'm glad you do.
but I mean, like, obviously it takes a day or two, but you know what I mean? Like, you get there and then you're like, you know what? I'm working for 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
When I knock off, I'm going to eat, I'm going to the gym, I'm going to sleep, and then it's just repeat.
Do you fly? I'll ask you a question. Do you fly with this new gig you're doing? Do you fly in their time or your own time? Because...
Both.
So you do? Do you go there?
So on day shift, I fly in their time, but on night shift, I fly in my time.
See, whereas like me, for example, as a comparison, I do purely days, 8 days on six off, and I'm pretty lucky in this regard, like very lucky, where I fly in on their time, and I fly home in their time.
Yep.
You know, essentially, it's my work time, but
that's right, yeah. Which is I used to do the same.
Yeah.
And
but a lot of people don't get that choice, do they?
Yeah.
Like that can be a bit of a that can throw your life out massively too.
Oh, absolutely. I've got a mate that flies to work on a Monday afternoon to sleep on site to start work Tuesday morning.
Yeah. And that's what I used to do with 2-in-1s, man.
Yeah.
We had to wait until our first day off and fly it in the morning. So you're essentially only getting six and a half days off.
Yeah.
By the time you get back in, especially if you live out of town a bit like I do, you got to drive down, you know.
Like, and we all know what it's like flying home off night shift or whatever.
Well, I haven't done it for a long time. I have done it. It's terrible.
I did it recently. I wasn't used to it because I hadn't done it for years. And, just like, as everyone knows, your body clock's so out. Like, you can't go to sleep when you get home. You just have to keep yourself up until it's time to go to bed. So,
you want to go to sleep, but you have to force yourself to stay awake. Yeah.
And you don't want to waste, because, it's a day off.
That's your first day off.
You don't want to waste it. Yeah. So, but then you're not really yourself either, and you're coming back into that life, like, say, with a partner or kids or whatever, and you've got to try and, it's pretty... Can be a bit of a... Yeah, a zombie. You're a zombie.
It's like nothing's going in.
Kids are yelling at you, mate, I'm not registered. just go and watch the bloody TV or play with your Lego.
I think for me and Latho, the difference is I know Latho flies in from work and he gets his son straight up.
I did.
For a long time he was doing that. And for me, I sort of take a different approach because I like to sort of adjust back into normal life again when I'm home. So I sort of take a day off or two just to get my little jobs out the way. So when I have the kids, I'm focused on them and I'm not distracted with all the other things going on.
Yeah.
So I think that's sort of...
It's definitely better for your mental health as well. And that adjustment period, like Pete's saying, it takes a bit of time, you need to...
You need a day for yourself.
Especially depending if you've had a hectic swing as well. Yeah. Like we do shutties and that at work, we have to run and...
And like you were saying, Pete, you need a day of running errands and getting stuff done and being an adult for a day where you don't necessarily want to drag your kid around while you do that. If you're driving here and there buying things or whatever.
Food and stuff.
That's right, stocking up the house or whatever.
You got to feed them, otherwise apparently it's not good if you don't. Apparently that's frowned upon, lawyers. who would have thought there?
I don't know. I haven't been there yet, so it's news to me.
Try not feeding the cats for a few days to see what happens.
I'll end up with only one cat left. I don't think Sheena would be impressed. But you're totally right. I think it's probably easy for people to frown upon the idea of somebody getting home from work and then taking time for themselves and not spending time with their kids.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's... Some people might say it's selfish, but I think it's more setting yourself up for success when you have your kids and when you're 100% focused on them and your attention's on them. Because if you've got, bills to pay or you got, things you need to do, you don't want to do that when you've got the kids. You want to be, there.
Yeah.
you know, in the moment with them.
Yeah, it's all you do, and that's where this new situation for me, I think, is going to work better.
Yeah, it's just
working. I miss a little bastard. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. But like you were saying about that, I think it all depends on every. Like, obviously, your situation is different. You got the two boys. I've got the one.
Yeah.
You know, your situation is different to mine in other ways as well.
Yeah, for sure.
So, like, I think, and I, this is one thing that. I mean, other parents would be able to relate to this if they're listening, like FIFO parents or whatever. I used to feel guilty if I didn't pick him up that night. And this is doesn't mean that Pedro doesn't want to see his kids as soon as he gets in or anything like that. He just wants to be, you know, in a good sort of...
I just want to have the energy to...
Yeah. And yeah, your situation with the care situation is different. Yeah.
Especially I have spent a little bit of time around your boys, and I know Lee has, and they're pretty full on, so you definitely need the energy to keep up with that.
Yeah. Full on, mate. It's just chasing around, doing all the things dads do, you know?
Yeah,
I just want to be like the best version of myself around them. So
absolutely,
you know, a couple of days off when you fly in, and then you know, I'll usually have them Friday after school pickup, and then spend the weekend with them, and Monday, Tuesday, and then fly back to work. Mm. So it sort of works for me, and you know, there might be some parents out there that do it different, but yeah,
just I think everyone does it differently. Yeah, that's you need right. to like exactly that. You need to find what works for you, and you need to find that balance. But yeah. I think it's something that should be respected more than frowned upon. If you're, I guess, man enough to admit that you would rather take the time to set yourself up so you can be the best father you can be. I think it's pretty admirable.
Exactly,
really.
Man. Exactly. And I've only been doing it for a short period of time, but I've already noticed a big shift in my, you know, like because I can train more and do things that are good for my wellness and my mental health too. Because, you know, as you boys know, like working in FIFO, it's, you know, there's this stigma around, oh, FIFO workers, you know, they make the big bucks, they live the good life, but... Like, I was just thinking about it the other day. I was actually talking to my brother on the phone, and he said he was struggling a bit with money and that, and I'm like, he's doing renos in his house and he doesn't really have aircon when he wants it and stuff like that. And I was like, you know what, man? But you're in town all the time. You can see your kids all too. Like, I'm away. I have to give... And it's a choice. Yeah, it's a choice, but it's also where our trades have taken us as well and what we've become accustomed to. But FIFO... It can be quite tough and very isolating, you know. Like it's
a sacrifice.
Yeah. It's a sacrifice, and like I've had people say to me, like previous partners, and that like, oh, it's your choice, you know, you choose to do this. But then I've tried to come back to the city and work in the city, and I just like it worked for a bit, but then I soon realised there was more suited to sort of working away.
I agree. Like it's tricky. Thing I really would like to point out to people is. Yes, the money can be good in mining and it can be good in fly in, fly out, but I do what I do because I enjoy the work that I do at work. So as a Sparky, I prefer being on a mine site as opposed to crawling through someone's roof in their house, you know. Like I've done it. As an apprentice, I did a lot of that and I hate it. I also was lucky enough to experience what it's like to work on a mine site and I realised I enjoyed that side of the trade. Therefore, I make the sacrifice of being able to do the job I enjoy. It's just the sucky part is that I'm not at home, you know? Like,
but in saying that, like, for example, with me and Pete, and I'm sure you could comment on this from your perspective as well, is that like me with my young fella, I get to spend quality time with him. Like if I was... At home working, like, and you're talking about how, like, even with me being a boilie, they call us bucketheads, bloody play bashers, whatever you want to call it. I like to call us.
There's lots of names.
Yeah, there's lots of names. A moth, because we follow a blue light.
And I just reckon you're a noisy prick.
Well, we are, I've got a good one for you, Bretto. What's the easiest way to get rid of a fucking Sparky?
What is the easiest way to get rid of a Sparky?
Start up a fucking grinder.
Absolutely.
Because you pricks run a mile. And then when you's and like the boys at work, because my workshop's next to the Sparky workshop. It's I don't know why it's like that. If it was me, I wouldn't have done it like that. We're usually out the back because we make so much noise and we smash shit and we don't, Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I do know what you mean. At my last site, I had the luxury to share half a workshop with a boilie. And it was the back half.
And he was only doing cable tray too, I bet, because if he was working with the Sparkies.
No. So it was a Boilermaker's workshop where he was repairing bogger buckets and stuff. So he was air arc gouging.
Yeah, that's what I... Yeah.
Like,
I think you should isolate boilies, mate, from everyone else. Things. They're just noisy buggers.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they're just rough as guts, mate, so...
They actually...
and if you look at a Sparky, like, look at my hands compared to yours, boys. I got big bloody... meat cleaver bloody hands. Have a look at your little gay Sparky hands.
I've got little.
Look at that. I've got sausage fingers. Look at him. His nails are all clean and he's.
I moisturise my hands actually.
Oh, I bet you do.
All the sanitizer you have to use. Jesus.
Yeah, well, that's true too.
Yeah. But yeah, what were we saying before? Getting back to the thing. Yeah, like the quality,
doing your
the
job
quality
and stuff,
time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the quality. Yeah. So back in Perth. I tried doing it and the workshops are sweatshops.
Yeah.
You're getting paid minimal pay within your trade. You're working like we're having to do 5.5-6 days a week because they still work 10 to 12 hour days here in the workshops. And if you don't work those hours, you don't get the wage that you need to support, I say, your lifestyle. But like just even like living in Perth is reasonably expensive as well.
And I mean... No one's going to disagree with the thought of everyone's trying to get ahead in life for their family or for their situation. Everyone wants to be able to earn the most they can so then they can best set themselves up.
Of course, yeah.
So like you said, unfortunately, if you have a job in town, you're working 6 days a week just to try and catch up. So you only have a 1 day off.
Not to mention you're busting your balls for it too. Like, not that we don't work hard out on site, but, you know... These boilie shops I've worked in, man, they're sweatshops, they're production lines.
One thing, I only had this conversation with Sheena yesterday. If you work in a workshop in town, you'll be doing 10-hour days, like you said, but then when you take into account travel there and back every day, you're doing an 11-hour day. Some people that travel further are probably doing a 12-hour day anyway.
Yeah, when you travel, yeah, as a nightmare.
And you're not getting paid, like, because it's peak hour traffic and all that shit.
Yeah.
So it's taking you probably 40 minutes to an hour each way.
Plus
sometimes,
you're lucky
in
if
some
you get
circumstances.
10 minutes for a smoko, and then, like, there was one joint I was working at, the buzzer would go off, and, like, you literally had to wash your hands as quick as you could, have a piss, whatever, and then you've got 8 minutes, you're sharing a crib hut with 150 blokes and there's 3 microwaves, and so like you have to literally plan your smoko so you're eating an apple and a friggin' muesli bar, which, you know, not mocking apples and muesli bars.
Yeah,
but
that's just too hard, isn't it?
Honestly, that's what some of the workshops for boilies are like down my way.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And they even said to me when I left, you're more suited to working on site. Like they actually said that. Yeah.
Referring to what?
Just that... That's the difference. That's what I'm getting at, the difference between working in a workshop in the city to working out on site. And that's not me saying we do less because, you know, we work hard. But the difference is, like, production lines, you're going to be able to read drawings because the trade's so diverse, just like being a Sparky with your intro Sparkies and your special side of your special sort of side of Sparking and that. It's, things like
it's
that.
It's a different,
well.
It's still the same trade, but it's a different part of the trade.
Yeah.
I know what you mean,
So.
Yeah. Did you have your young bloke when you were working in a workshop in town?
Yeah, so I think you and I spoke about possibly maybe doing another podcast at some point. I'll touch on that a bit more, but...
Sounds great.
sounds wicked.
Well, you made a couple of podcasts to listen to Latho, mate, so...
He knows me too well.
Now we're 25 minutes in and Lathan's taking his first breath for the episode.
Take it in, buddy.
I
hasn't finished yet, hold on.
Oh, no, I'll stop. That's fine. I've got no chance. Brenna asked me a question and I have an answer, so...
No, that's cool. No. I think we should save it because...
I don't want to dominate.
Honestly, feel like we could dive into a lot of stuff you and I have already discussed that we'd like to go through while Sheena's here as well.
Yeah. I'd love to do my machiney.
Yeah, for sure. Machiney. But you guys go long way back. You're obviously mates.
Yeah.
Where did this friendship start?
Oh, we met at Connections one weekend. Pete had
it just blossomed.
I don't know, Pedro. You take it away. Apparently, I'm talking too much.
Like back in the day in Kalgoorlie.
Good old Cal days, mate.
We met at the footy club. So,
did both you boys grow up in Kalgoorlie?
No,
we didn't meet at school, but we met after sort of like, you know, after your apprenticeship and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We didn't know each other at school.
I moved to Cal from Esperance for my apprenticeship.
Yeah.
To get in. I actually wasn't a boilie to begin with. I started off in the mines doing what you would class as shit kicker jobs, like lower tier sort of jobs to work my way up.
Yeah.
So we just met at footy and we just kicked it off and we just got along and just hung out and, you know, obviously in the same grade, resis. So, kicked all around to each other and all that sort of stuff. And
back when Pedro could kick.
I was a backman, so I can't kick. But I'd always spot Latho down the forward line and try and kick it to him. But
to be fair, Pedro was pretty shit. I've come a long way. It's taken me 25 years of playing footy.
If you're anything like me in the back line, you just grab the footy and kick it as hard and far as you can.
Yeah, I was
just launch it back down the forward line.
I was a bit of a fast break burster, so I just grab the ball and just kick it as hard as I can and just hope it lands forward lap. So. That's how we
had some good fun in Cal though, didn't we, bro?
Yeah,
it was a work hard, play hard town.
Yeah,
especially back when Cal was booming, man. Like it was.
How long ago are we talking? 10 years ago? 20 years ago?
2000 and.
Jeez, that's back. Let me think.
Started my apprenticeship. Oh, old boys.
Over 10 years ago, I can't remember exactly what year it was, but
It was. I started my adult apprenticeship when I was 21. And I did it for 3, so it would have been 2000. So was it maybe 15 years? Probably 15 years.
Say pretty close to that.
About that. Yeah.
And I did an apprenticeship in Kalgoorlie as well, but mine wasn't even related to what I'm doing now. So I actually did a photocopier technician apprenticeship.
That's random.
In Kalgoorlie, and you wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe it. Mate, the amount
I didn't even know that was a thing.
The amount of numbers I got from visiting offices was
office
insane.
True.
They would just jam the photocopier on purpose just to see me.
Come on, listen to it.
I've heard this bloke talk some shit.
Jesus. But that was what's going on.
There's a reason they call him Pestro, people. It's not Pedro, it's Pestro. He's a pest.
There was a few paper jam sex situations pest. Going on.
Pestro.
And then...
sex pest.
And I'll just finish. You guys finish. And then...
carry on, mate.
And after that, obviously the trade I was in didn't pay well. So I left that job after my trade and after my apprenticeship. And
what sort of trade did you get out of that, sorry?
So the trade that I was in was electronic servicing certificate. Yep. So that was basically, like anything electronic I could pretty much maintain and repair. And then, got into the mines through another company that looked after underground remotes. So I sort of started my mining career with that company and spent 7 years with them.
So that's like tele-remote bogging?
Yeah, like underground tele-remote bogging.
Yeah.
Any like television underground, all that sort of stuff. So it was pretty cool to work with that technology and sort of understand how everything works underground.
Yeah.
Still
down that electronic / almost like comms techie type of
pretty
work.
Much like electronic / comms. Yeah. So you're looking after like, you know, electronics, but also the products were reliant on communications.
Yeah.
So you learn a lot about how everything works underground comms-wise.
Yeah.
And then after that, I started doing underground comms. So running leaky feeder and all those sort of communications for radios and that underground.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty important role because everyone needs comms underground, obviously. We all know.
Yeah, for sure.
How dangerous it is underground.
Don't know, never been underground. Actually, haven't never
you
been
don't
under
miss it out on much.
You haven't lived.
Always surface.
It's
you
just
know,
a big
one day, maybe
hole,
boys.
Mate,
one day.
You just got a little cap lamp on, and you go down and you do your job and you get out and it's dark again. So it's just it's the same thing, isn't it?
Especially when I lived in Tassie, because of like come winter time, you've only got sunlight from I don't know what time, like 8 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock at night. You know, you rock up to work at 5 a.m. or 5:30 a.m. You're in the hole by six. And then by the time you come back out from underground at the end of the day, same thing. It's like five o'clock in the arvo, 5:30 in the arvo.
Yeah.
You don't see the sun for a week.
Yeah.
For your whole swing, you do not like see the sun.
A bit of a vampire?
Like a nocturne
without the teeth? Blood fetish?
Well, I honestly reckon that there's a big vitamin D deficiency in that area of Tasmania in general.
Yeah.
But I think amongst workers and underground workers, I think there's a massive vitamin D deficiency.
Same with night shift. They reckon it takes years off your life.
Yeah.
Or time off your life.
And not only that, like, they reckon that it, you know, leads to depression and stuff like that as well. Yeah, like, so you can understand why people walk around feeling miserable all the time, because
it's not natural to be awake at night. Like, it's, it's just part of your job, but you know, you try and do the best you can and adjust to it. But for me personally, I haven't really worked that much night shift, but I hear about the stories of guys.
Yeah, shit.
And, you know, like,
I've done it.
It's hard to
function. In Cal, I did heaps of it, man.
Yeah.
Heaps of it. We'd spend, you'd do 12 to 14 hour shifts by the time you drive the truck out to the lakes at St. Ives and work out in the dumpy trays out there in my apprenticeship, and we'd just do night shift.
Yeah.
When you're younger, you can deal with it a bit easier.
I mean, there's pros to it.
But as you get older,
pros to it, because, like, you know, you don't get the heat of the day.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, you don't get the flies and all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, obviously, it's not natural to stay awake at night.
There were other pros as well. You could go down to Hannon's for the early openers. The skimpy was on. You could stare for people. Nah, surely people know what a skimpy is.
I don't know if anyone's heard the saying, if it's not right, do it at night. But I think a lot of that goes on. So if someone wants to do something dodgy and you're not going to do it on day shift, I think people
safety
do
it on
night shift just to, like, you know, sort of.
There's not as many eyes on night shift, so you can tend to bend and shape the rules a little bit to suit, but.
Not that any
I've
of
never
us.
Done that at
no,
all.
No, I haven't either.
Never.
It's just the same.
But that's what
about.
People kind of joke about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a slang that miners use, like, if it's not right, do it at night.
Yeah.
So.
But I do know people that actually prefer night shift because they're like, oh, less bosses are around, you know, like.
And the heat, and the heat with summer and that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, I think that, I don't, you know, it's like some people don't like the feeling of the pressure of feeling like someone's always watching them over their shoulder, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
even
exactly,
though,
yeah.
like, management don't. But, like, some people...
It depends where you go.
Yeah, it depends where you work, obviously. But I'm just coming from my own experience.
Yeah.
But if you talk to guys that spend their whole shift in the workshop on the surface, like, obviously there's always managers walking in and out of the workshop and stuff like that, depending on where
then
their offices
investors
are.
Investors and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, so, like, you can understand why they just... they. Everyone likes to get given their job and they can go and just do their job and not worry about anyone else. Not have to worry about, like, you know what I'm trying to say?
I know
you're
saying, you know, like, obviously,
you just
want
to be left alone
and
do your job, and you're happy to just tinker along or smash the workout.
Yeah.
Which I think when me and Pete met at the footy club in Cal, we were both working in town at our apprenticeships. So, but we were still working shift work. So, I don't know about Pete, but, you know, I used to come in from working out on the lake and you had a big night. And, like, the culture in Cal was pretty awesome back in those days. I don't think it's much like that anymore, but you'd be straight down the pub with the boys, because the first thing you want to do is just tuck into a nice big pint of beer and a nice big brekkie. Yeah, and a cannery. So, it's a place called Hannon's in Cal where we used to go down and... you'd pull up there, and you go in your work gear, because Cal was just a working town.
Yeah.
Go in there, walk in, there's a lovely skimpy there ready to serve you. She gets you a nice cold pint of beer, then you order a massive big brekkie. But then next thing you know it, because, you know, you get around the lads and you're having a good time with the skimpy and having a laugh and throwing coins around and whatever, flicking bottle caps, whatever. And the next minute, you know, you're pissed as, and it's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You got to go to work that night.
There's no like concept of time.
But you're that tired. I don't know about you if you'd done it as well, but you're that tired, but you're pissed. You barely talk. So you're stumbling out like, of the pub, dragging your ass back to your house just down the road or whatever, getting maybe 4 or 5 hours sleep, and then you got to get up and do it again. But, like, if I tried to do that now, being 37, mate, I'd be, you know what it's like, you'd be KO'd for 3 days. Whereas back then, man, because you were making the bucks, you know, we were working hard.
It was young just, and full of energy.
Yeah, it was wicked, but, like, yeah, it's...
I think when you're young too and... young and single, and I guess you almost don't have any responsibilities, you're getting around the boys.
Yeah.
Even if you like had a big day on the piss and you felt like shit that whole next shift, you'd be like, never again, I'm not drinking beer, never again.
But as soon as the next
and then as soon as you knock off work, all the boys are like, let's go to the pub, yeah, let's do it.
Well, I was working at a bar.
Mentality, isn't it?
Yeah, and then it's like, it's just a cycle.
But when I was doing my apprenticeship, and this would be good for people to hear about, like when you do your apprenticeship, you tend to be on less money. I didn't have an apprenticeship, so I was on, I think I was $16 a year, an hour in my first year. And, like, that's pretty good, but...
$16
An hour.
As an adult.
As an adult apprentice in my first year.
I would have said that's pretty
low. That's what I was on as a first-year trainee. Straight out of my first...
A lot of guys I hear about that did it, like, around my age when they were... coming out of school, they're only on $7 or $8. This is 15 years ago, you know what I mean? And I also was pretty green. I'd never even picked up a welder or a grinder. I was a bit of a pretty boy, you know?
Yeah.
Still am a bit of a
pretty boy. I don't know about that.
But, like, yeah, I had to work a second job as well.
Really?
Yeah, I was a butt. You don't know this about me, Bretto, because we haven't known each other for years like me and Pedro have. Pedro knows because he used to come in there and get drinks. I used to work at one of the bars there in Cal as well. So I'd knock off from work and work. And I think 1 week I did a record. It was like 102 hours at my main job, my apprenticeship. And then I was working like the odd night shift. And I'm talking like proper nightclub night shift, because it went from an eating pub to a nightclub with the Dirty D floor and all that stuff. And, so I was working the two jobs, man, but still doing that stuff.
Like so what time would you knock off your normal day job? Like 5 o'clock?
Like six, yeah.
And then what time would you start your pub
Pretty much straight away, like go to work at like
so you'd 7 have a, or 8. Have a shower.
Have a feed, could shower, bit of tucker down.
And then head to the pub
head to start the pub working. And work. But it was good too, like as much as serving people behind the bar was a bit shit because you get all the drunk morons and whatever.
Like Pedro.
Pestro. Pestro. Look over and he's giving some poor bird the stink eye. I'm like, oh, Pedro, what are you doing? So, like it's, like that was tricky because I think I was looking at buying a house at that point too, so, you know.
So you're obviously trying to save hard and stuff like that.
Yeah, but also when you're doing your apprenticeship, like you're on minimal bucks. So yeah, like
it's hard living, isn't it, when you're on that
minimum? It is. I don't think people realise too that like you've got to basically be a minimal wage worker for 4 years while learning your craft. And then even when you get out of your trade, you're not on, like you're still classified as, you know, like people look at how much experience you've got and they're like, oh, you know, you've got to have a minimum of 2 years or 3 years or 4 years in this area or that area. So, yeah, that's
interesting. You come out as a first-year tradesman and you're almost looked upon as an apprentice.
You're still learning. Yeah.
Which can be hard in itself, like you said, because people are asking for 2 years' experience.
Yeah.
And then you ask yourself the question, how the hell do I get 2 years' experience?
Yeah, especially when you've got all these other areas too, like I started in bucket boiling, which no one, unless you're a boiler, is going to know what I'm talking about, but it's working on mobile earth moving.
Yeah.
And then I went from there, I got the pip with that a bit after my apprenticeship because it's pretty, when it comes to boiler making, it's pretty shitty work. And then shifted to a bit of fab work and pipe fitting and that sort of thing, and then I went to construction, which comes your longer rosters, which is a whole different ball game, which I'll talk to you more about in the other or whatever. But then I went to fixed plant, and then like when you're jumping from area to area to area, like different parts of the industry, you've got to like spend time building up that.
Because you're learning something new.
Yeah, because it is. It's you essentially.
Yeah, like you know how to weld and you know how to cut.
Yeah, well, you still use the basic skills. Yeah.
It's a completely different thing. Like welding up a tub on a truck is different to welding up a pipe.
Yeah.
Completely different.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I know what you're saying, and that's the same for like
same our trades, you know. Too,
yeah. Like Pete coming out of fixing up photocopiers.
Yeah.
And now he's a tradesman and needs to learn how to, you know, like sort out teleremote boggers.
Oh, sounds like he was more busy tuning birds than fixing photocopiers.
it was a good job for that, for sure. I probably didn't say exactly what I do, but at the moment I'm a machine systems specialist, so I look after a lot of technology on the fleet up north, so it's a pretty dynamic role. I do a lot of diverse work, so it's like a little bit of auto sparky work, a little bit of comms work, a little bit of IT. So it's like three different skills to like carry out the jobs that I do up north. So you're always learning something new, and you're always coming up with some pretty cool challenges. So it keeps you interested in the job because you're always learning something new.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very diverse.
And it's a way of the mining world too, going autonomy, autonomy, isn't it, man?
Yeah, so yeah. The place I'm working at isn't autonomous, but they call it manned, so obviously they're an operator in the machines, in the trucks, if we're talking autonomous. But they'll probably go that way eventually.
Everyone's going that way. All the bigger companies. Yeah.
You've spent a lot of time with autonomous trucks, though, haven't you?
I have, yeah. In the previous job I was at, I worked for a company that, had autonomous trucks on site. So,
do you think people understand, like listeners understand what autonomy is?
So, worth explaining? Like, everyone knows what an autonomous truck is. Obviously it drives itself, it doesn't need human interaction, it's just basically GPS guided, so it doesn't have an operator in the cab.
And when we say truck, we're talking about these big ass dump trucks that carry how many tons in their tub, like
the ones where I work at, they can carry up to 315 tons, that's pretty big. So
we're looking at probably a 100 ton truck maybe. Yeah. Carrying 300 tons of dirt.
Have you ever seen an LV get hit by one of them?
Oh,
in not in real life.
No, in like in video. Yeah, it's like watching a car drive over Coke can.
They reckon they don't even. It's like basically like a little bit of a speed bump.
Yeah, feel it. Man. It's like a bundy. You know, you wouldn't even feel it. And like a lot of the companies these days.
Here we are. Oh, do you reckon they know what autonomous trucks is?
Yeah, what's a bundy? What's a bundy?
Yeah, it's a bundy.
Well, it's basically a rock.
Yeah.
It's a rock.
But no, you're right. Like, my best description would be like a car driving over a Coke can.
It's crazy, man.
It's like one of these trucks driving over a Land Cruiser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just doesn't even feel it.
No. Yeah, it doesn't look like the operator even sees it or feels it, so it's dangerous, man. I think, like, from my experience going from autonomous to manned, I think autonomous is definitely the way to go. You'd be surprised how safe it is, because you can actually see where all the trucks are going to go on the screen. So there's like a permission line, they call it, and it shoots out in front and actually tells you where they're going on the mine. So whereas if you're relying on a human operator, sometimes that might indicate the wrong way, or they might, like, you know, just not indicate at all, and you're sort of up for that risk.
There's that human error factor.
Yeah, there's a human error factor, and obviously humans need to eat and shit and, you know, sleep, have a rest. Yeah. So, you know, like, obviously autonomous trucks don't need to do that, so they just keep running, and anytime they stop for a daily inspection.
Or a tire fire.
Or a tire fire, yeah. Shut it down for sure.
Like deciding where they do drive by themselves, I imagine there's like a computer and someone literally just like click of the mouse can go, this truck go to this spot, or does it work like that, or is it?
That's why I call Pedro half a sparky, because he just pushes buttons, he doesn't actually twitch wires. He just sits there and goes beep beep.
I'm a master beep. of I'm a I'm a jack of all trades.
Master of none. I was going to say that before.
That's what I was trying to say.
He goes all right.
Yeah, look, man, it's everyone says, oh, is there someone in Perth that drives these trucks? And I'm like,
I guess that was my question. Like, I don't know if there is or not.
No, so it's not driven by anyone from Perth. It's not like someone's sitting there with a joystick or a steering wheel and they're driving the
truck. It's all satellite, isn't it?
It's all satellite GPS guided, and it's all like assigned. So the trucks are assigned to a location.
So, yeah, but obviously someone has to assign that location. Yeah, so
You've got like dispatchers in Perth.
Yep.
So they look after all the assignments for the machines.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of like a program, isn't it?
Yeah, so they tell the trucks where to go.
IT program.
And they're guided by GPS, and my job is to make sure that those trucks are still rolling, and they've got communications to the trucks from Perth. If anything goes down, then obviously we'll go out there and fix it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's so cool, the technology in mining these days. Like, it's...
It is,
it blows my mind, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to get into mining,
yeah.
My personal opinion is, like, become a... I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm going to say it. Become a Sparky.
What are you, Sparky? You know, well, it's the way of the future.
You fuckers get paid the most out of all of us. And you do, even the boys up at work, they say it. They go, yeah, we get paid the most and we do the least. And I'm like, fuck.
But, mate, the thing
is... No, autonomy, though. No, but being serious, autonomy is the way of the world. Like, everything's going...
Do you know what they call us on site? Like, autonomous techs? They call us multitask ninjas, mate, because we're doing 100 million things at once. I don't know if a boilie can handle that. But we'll
guess. I just want to know how much a ticket. I just want to know how much it is a ticket to the Pedro show. Bro. That's all I want to know, because I ain't fucking buying one. Bretto's a lot more humble than you are. Fuck.
Yeah, I'm
for a Sparky.
Yeah, I'm just giving it back to him. But
it's the banter with the trades, isn't it? How good's the banter? It's like a fitters, mate. Grease monkeys.
Yeah. What's who do you?
They give us shit.
Who do you think's the biggest rival in trades?
Well, there's always fitters, sparkies, boilies. There's rivalry with, like, you could sit here for hours, which we don't have, and like dribble off.
Like, out of your experience, what do you find?
Fitters, the fitters and boilies. Well, so at my work, for example, I'm the only boilie on my crew because I have a back to back, but he's obviously opposite crew.
Yeah.
There's fitters, so there's two of them. And then there's two, usually one or two sparkies, and all four of them fucking gang up on me. You know why? Because they're dogs. They hunt in numbers. So I've got no one to back me up. So I'm just copping it from all angles. And you know what I do? I just smash a plate on the table and start up a grind, and they fuck off.
Start swinging that hammer.
Just get swinging on the hammer, and then they're like, yeah, and I'm like, yeah.
I think the biggest rivalry, in my opinion, is between fitters and sparkies. But that's just coming from my industry.
Yeah, like, obviously...
It can fitters, be fun. It's fun, like...
It is.
Yeah, it is. It's a bit of
until
banter,
someone...
You know,
yeah,
like,
until someone...
It's like a who's more important on the machine sort of deal sometimes. Like, oh, what do you got to do? I'm like, oh, I've got to do this. And like,
I hate to say it, but sparkies are, out of fitters, boilies, sparkies... Sparkies are the top of the food chain.
Thank you.
I hate to say it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it does not mean that you're usable.
Thank you.
Fuck you.
We're not ganging up on you, mate.
Same thing again. Two sparkies, one boilie. And what happens? But no, that's... And then fitters and boilies are always sort of usually on the same pay grade, whereas sparkies are always just a little bit more because they play with something that they can't see that can kill them. But then you look around the back and they're out the back fucking rubbing each other's bums. You're like, well, what's going on here? Like,
I'm off it.
Playing with cable, you
know? Yeah, playing with some, yeah, feeding each other cable.
But yeah, I think I totally agree with Bretto. You know, every time I go onto a digger and I go to lock on, they'll always ask me what I need to do on the machine, and like, they're like, no, you need to wait, you know, like, we're doing a service on it, so you need to wait until we're finished. So generally, like,
yeah,
from a comms tech side, like, from a comms tech side, we're pretty important on site, but when it comes to our jobs, we usually get pushed back to the end. So yeah. Like, if there's a little bit of fat left on the job, that's when we'll fit in.
Yeah. I'm the same, I'll say as a Sparky, we're the same. Unless the only time it's different is if there's no power.
Yeah,
like,
well,
if there's no power, they're priority. Like Sparky's priority.
Yeah. Same
like
with
every
our
other
mill.
Time. It's
like,
like
you guys are the last ones working. Like, we'll have a shutty, and like the mechanical work takes obviously main focus, but you need the sparkies at the end to get the joint back up and running, yeah. Like on the mill where I am.
I think it's natural because I think the mechanical side of most jobs, like it's a bigger job, it takes longer,
yeah.
If you know what I mean.
But putting it into a little bit more context too is like, for example, where I work, if there's, say we're getting to the end of the shutdown and we haven't completed some tasks, they'll get like, oh, we can do them next week or whatever. But then you still need the sparkies to get everything back up and running. Without the sparkies, you're screwed. So, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, well, okay. Calm down. Just calm down.
There's a bit of a hierarchy going on.
I'm quite happy to say that you guys are
I've got to admit,
at the top of the food chain. Anyone within the industry
will say that. I couldn't be a boilie on a mine site, man. Like, all power to you. I've seen boilies in the pit welding away in like 50 degrees.
Used to do that shit in the super pit, man. It was like 50 and I'm laying under a 70-ton clamshell, so it's a two-piece bucket, laying on my back in full leathers, welding.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not, like, sooking about it or anything. It is what it is, and I'm a sweaty individual. I feel sorry for the people that I train with at F45 because I just sweat everywhere. It's disgusting. Anyway.
But you're right, though, because you think about the boiler has to put up with heat because he's obviously creating his own heat.
Yeah.
He's creating fumes and dust. So you got to breathe that shit in wear the full, like,
AdFlow
face thing. Yeah,
I wear an AdFlow filtered mask.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
And then the noise. So you're constantly wearing earplugs to protect your hearing. Like, you've almost got, like, the...
Yeah.
You know, the trio, you know?
It's brutal as far as the trade goes. It's pretty brutal on the body, the lungs, et cetera, et cetera. There's not many boilies you'll see kicking around sort of 60 and they're fit and able.
They probably moved on to become sparkies. Yeah.
Well,
but you're right.
Yeah, maybe they saw the light and they decided to be a sparky.
But
then they realised their hands were like sausages and they couldn't fiddle with the wires.
But you raise a good point because it's such a physically demanding job as well. Big time, because you're constantly like lifting and carrying like
heavy pieces of metal. Cable too, and that's, I've seen you guys pull big HV cable. This isn't pissing in your pockets because I think we've done enough of that. But, like, it's pretty tough doing that too. Like, I don't know how you guys sit there and pull cable all day.
Yeah.
You're smiling at me. I'm being serious. Like,
no, I know what you mean.
I've done it as well. Yeah.
Yeah, like, the cables we run underground, it's fucking like, hard.
What is that's it, like 80 mil, 100 mil diameter?
Oh, sometimes it's 11 kv cable. Like, that's big, so heavy shit, and it doesn't bend, hey?
It's not the pink or purple cable they run it's underground. It's like
red, reddish, like pinkish, color. I suppose,
I used to help the HV sparkies underground, and I'd run my little yellow coax feeder, which is like, weighs nothing.
Yeah.
But I'd just run along the services where the HV sparkies run their cables.
Yeah.
And helping them out, I was like, man, that's pretty physical. Like,
yeah.
In the basket, trying to hold a cable up and hang it at the same time.
One day I've thought about this for a while, but I'd love to like strap a GoPro to myself while I'm doing a cable run underground.
Oh, man.
Because it's such a unique thing that like it's hard to even explain to people in words.
Yeah.
Because most people, if you see someone in town running a big cable, like a cable this size, if you're running it in town, you'd be running it through a trench. So you dig a trench and then you'd basically just like throw the cable in a trench.
Yeah. And you've got things to do it with because you've got ease of access and all
that. That's right. We're like, we drag it out and then once it's all dragged out along the ground, we then have to lift it up to the roof and hang it up on the roof, which is like six.
Or sometimes you get in a sling and you're putting it around your waist and you're trying to skull drag it with your bloody
body and shit like that. Like, you know, underground, the roof's 6 metres away, so you have to get in a man basket in a machine, like basically on the end of a front-end loader or an IT, as we call them, and
lift the cable
up. And then lift the cable up, and then every couple of metres you got to put a hanger up to, like, obviously keep it up, on them.
I've got a question for you. You just said IT. I should know this. What's the actual, like, IT? What's the name for it? It's obviously called an IT.
It's Intermediate Tool Carrier.
Is that what it's
integrated?
Is that what it's
integrated? Yeah, sorry. Integrated, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so IT is just a front end loader with a basket attachment.
Yeah.
So I know how to drive one of these at work. I'm passed out to drive one at work and I don't even know what it means.
Yeah.
I know what they do.
That's right. No, you're right.
They do. Yeah, that must be a boilie thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Just some oily things.
So, yeah, the best description for the listeners at home that don't understand, integrated tool carrier, it's just like a front-end loader. You would see it like a quarry, but you can remove the bucket. Change
out the attachments for a bucket or a set of forks.
Yeah, that's right.
You can, tines on or whatever.
Forks or a jib. Yeah. Or a man basket, so you can just basically change the attachments or change the tool that that it carries. So
it's so funny, like when they say, "Oh yeah, you're working underground, but you're working at heights." So yeah, it's sort of a bit weird, you know, because like when people think working at heights, you're working on a tower, like a massive tower that's like, you know, 10
meters high. Yeah,
you're actually working at heights underground because the basket's like 3-4 meters high above the
exactly. decline. So. Yeah. Yeah, so we've still got to wear harnesses underground when it's like stupid hot and you're sweating and it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, man. I don't miss underground. I did that for a while and then, moved on to surface and haven't looked back. So, I
definitely smart man.
Don't miss underground life.
It's like when I was working at Barrow Island, man, under CS, they made us wear like harnesses with lanyards on perfectly well-built scaffolds because some guy had died over in America doing something, I think, and it was just this mandatory rule, and it was like 100% humidity, 35 degrees, like we were in full fire-retardant work gear, the FRC stuff that you guys have to wear and stuff when you do HV and that. It was just crazy, man. It was, but we were getting paid. I was getting $3,500 a week in the hand for 10-hour days, so we didn't complain.
So you're standing on scaffolding. What were you hooking your harness to?
That's the thing, Bretto. Some of these rules, they it created a hazard because you're wearing a harness, you're constantly getting caught up on stuff. It was just a bit of an overkill. But that's what happens with safety. You know, there's always a knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah.
As you guys know.
Yeah.
It's always someone that makes a mistake or something happens and then there's always that knee-jerk reaction. How can we improve or stop that from happening? Which a lot of things are good, but then there's a lot of things that are
like
they create more. You resolve a hazard, but you create another hazard by resolving that hazard.
Yeah.
Like an old boy once pointed out to me, a lot of the rules that we follow in mining are rules that were written in blood, or however he worded it. Basically, means somebody
reactive.
Somebody's died.
Yeah.
And through that, they found out that if they had been doing something, X, Y, Z, it wouldn't have happened. So then from then on, everyone doing this job has to do that thing which is going to stop it from happening.
Yeah.
And we can all agree,
there's
plenty of things that we do now that we're glad we have to do.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man.
To stop that shit from happening.
Yeah.
As much as it can be an inconvenience.
No, it's there for a reason.
Well, like, at the end of the day, mate, you just want to get home, don't you? So,
that's right. That's what we go to work for.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's a lot of people forget about that when they're on site, you know, like everyone's heard of perceived pressure on the mine site. So, you know, like you feel like you need to get the job done and then you'll take a shortcut to get it done so that, you know, basically you feel like you're under pressure to do the job, but really you're not. You just take your time. You do the right thing by filling out a Take 5 or a JHA or anything like that just so you get home. You know, because like, you just want to come home to your loved ones and spend quality time with them. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's only a job. You get paid for it. And then you come home and enjoy your real life. So
Not worth getting hurt or losing your life over
at all.
So.
Sure.
But yeah, you're right with the whole perceived pressure thing. I think a lot of people, and this is a message for the young players out there, never feel pressured and never be afraid to
speak up
if you feel like, you know, something's unsafe or you feel like you're being pressured into doing something you don't think you should be.
Yeah.
Speak up, because I know you boys, older fellas, been in the industry for a long time. And
Experienced.
Older fellas. But you're confident.
37 done that.
I think confidence is a huge thing, because, like, I can also agree that if I see something or I feel like I'm being made to do something I don't agree with or I don't feel comfortable in doing, I'm going to put my hand up and say no.
You get that tingle, don't you? You get that tingle.
For sure,
you
know, absolutely.
Gone wrong.
Yeah.
But it takes a long time to get that.
Yeah.
It takes a long time to get those instincts.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think, the message you need to put out to the younger guys in the industry is, if you're unsure, Jesus, just Don't be afraid to say no. Go and ask a more experienced tradesman or whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
Look after yourself because it's not worth it.
And listen, and I think the biggest thing too I've noticed lately too is that a lot of young blokes coming through, they're a bit blasé, some of them. So my advice is, like, listen to the older guys because they've been doing this shit for a long time and they know what they're doing. And, like, that's how you're going to learn and that's how you're going to get somewhere and be a good tradesman. Like, if you come in being a gung-ho, cocky, smart-ass, I know how to do it all, it's not going to get you very far. You know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah, yeah, you've got to, you got to listen and take it all in. And
absolutely.
Yeah, work smarter, not harder. And, yeah, just listen to the experienced guys and just keep yourself safe. Just take your time. Don't rush anything. That's pretty much, you know, the key.
Safety from absolutely. When we were doing, like, in our apprenticeships to now, how much has that changed?
Oh,
safety?
Yeah, like, you see a lot of things that, you know, you don't even see anymore because it's just been stamped out.
Yeah.
You know,
like, which is good.
Yeah, it's good for everyone, you know, and... You just take your time and do the job right and don't rush.
Yeah.
That's pretty much.
Perfect. Great advice from a couple of seasoned veterans.
I feel like I'm ready for my war pension now. I've been at war now with my pension.
How many tours have you done?
Oh, just a couple, mate.
Well, I think that's the perfect moment for us to wrap it up. It's been a great chat.
Sounds good. Yeah. Thanks for that.
Appreciate you fellas coming in. And
even though Latho was taken over, but that's all good, mate. That's his personality.
We quickly brought him in the line.
So he's all good.
I don't think that was that bad, actually. He's giving me a complex. Even the bloody cat down there disagreeing with you, Pedro, I reckon. Nah, cheers for having us on, Bretto. It's a ripper, mate.
Yeah, thanks,
I think
Bretto.
What you're doing is awesome.
Thanks for inviting us to do this podcast, mate. And yeah, really appreciate your time.
No worries. Thanks, fellas.
All good, mate. No
cheers,
worries.
Mate.
Thanks to all the listeners out there for tuning in for this episode, and we'll see you again next time.
Once again, thank you for listening to this episode of The FIFO Show. If you enjoyed it, please share it amongst your friends. If you would like to get in contact with us or just keep up to date with what's happening on The FIFO Show, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at The FIFO Show. We hope to have the next episode out soon. But until then, stay safe and take it easy.